Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Madian Shaida. Shaida holds an MA in psychology and is author of 4 books. Shaida is a licensed psychotherapist and taught psychology and counseling at JFK University, the University of Phoenix, and the Chicago School for Professional Psychology. Shaida, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. So happy to be here.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for being part of the Love Osho podcast. I'm really happy to have the opportunity to chat with you. You have many years of experience as a therapist, as a tantra teacher, and obviously in personal development. And of course, you met Osho in the physical form. So I can't wait to dive in and hear your story. So let's start from the beginning. And I'd love to know how you came to know about Osho.
It was 1978, and I was living in Venice Beach, California. You probably know this wild place, and all kinds of eccentric people are there and creative people. And I was in the little bookstore there, and I was looking in the Tantra section. Well, there actually wasn't a Tantra section back then. There was the New Age section. And I saw this book, The Book of Secrets. I loved the title, and I looked at the back cover, and Osho's eyes were there. And that's a connection that has never stopped. So I was like, who is this person? And what is this book? I bought this book. And then I was around in the carnival that is Venice, and I would see all these people wearing red and the mala. And we were all very open to everyone back then. So it was just, there were Hare Krishnas, and there were people wearing white with white turbans. And then there were these people wearing red with the malas. But these people were particularly kind of sexy and alive and interesting. And so I would just kind of walk around and see them. And I remember saying to a friend of mine, I don't want to wear all red, but I'd like one of those necklaces. I wonder if I can get one of those. And so this was just, I was open to everything. I was reading Osho. And then I went to, I found my career while I was there. I left Venice Beach to become, I found a school that taught transpersonal psychology, which is spiritual psychology in addition to Western psychology, where you could talk about spirituality there and not be kicked out. So I started my graduate work there, and there was a sannyasin man there wearing red and his mala, and we eventually married. But it was during that time that I had an overwhelming experience. I was walking to work one day, and I remember the sun was beating down. I was listening to Osho music on my little Walkman, and this dog was nipping at my heels, and it was just this overwhelming bliss in that moment. And I realized I'm going to take sannyas. And this did not agree with my ego at all. My ego wanted to continue to be a person who searches forever. I'm open to everything. I didn't want to choose, but it happened to me, just this overwhelming bliss. And that's how I became a sannyasin. I got in the car and drove to Rajneeshpuram. We'd been there about 3 times, and Osho had just left. He'd just been kicked out of the country. And I received sannyas from Santosh. And that's how that happened. Yeah, you know, but even at the transpersonal school, it was interesting. Even at the transpersonal school, where they were open to everything, my soon-to-be husband, who was wearing red and a mala, was told he couldn't wear that when he was being a therapist. And he made a big fuss that this was his religion, and he didn't need to be told how to dress. But so they eventually reversed their decision. But even at that point, there was discrimination against Osho's vision, probably because he's so alive and that scares people.
I see. I understand. I think you mentioned that you came across the book in 1978, and then you took sannyas in 1985.
Yes.
So what happened through the years? Have you been much in touch with sannyasins? Have you done many meditations? Have you ever considered meeting Osho in person before that point? Talk us through that.
Yes, we had gone to the local centers where they would have videos and meditations. When I took sannyas at the time, there was a requirement to do dynamic meditation every morning for 21 days. And I faithfully took the bus for an hour each way down to do a dynamic with other sannyasins. We were in touch with the local community. We were members of the local community, which was meeting and supporting each other. We were reading books, of course, and we had gone to Rajneeshpuram 3 or 4 times. And there was where I had my, Osho was in silence at the time, but Osho drove by in the car, and I got to be in his presence when he drove by in the car. It was this huge radiance. Boom. So that's all I got. And that was kind of all that was a lot. I didn't ever actually get to sit in a discourse because, as I said, when we went, it's when he was in silence. But I can remember sitting and watching on the screen when he was in silence. We would watch these videos of him in silence and just be weeping and weeping because the radiance of that silence was almost stronger than when he would be speaking and the mind would get engaged. The mind would be thinking about what he's saying and so on. But when the radiance of his silence was just so, so beautiful. So during that time, when my ego is like, well, this is great. This guy's great. He's probably my primary teacher, but I'm not a person who takes sannyas. It's just not my identity. And then boom, it wasn't about me anymore at all, which is one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Yes, I totally resonate. It's not a conscious decision. It's not that you decided, okay, I'm going to take sannyas. It kind of happened despite of you.
Almost exactly.
An invisible force that pulled you and said, okay,
exactly.
I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
Wonderful. So you studied transpersonal psychology, and then, of course, you became a therapist. And I'm wondering if within the school and the practice and the colleagues and people you have learned from and you've worked with, you have come across other therapists and professionals who talk about Osho or who have used some of Osho's ideas and visions in their practice?
I had to be undercover for many, many years because body, mind, spirit, new age, whatever we want to call it, spirituality was considered very taboo. It's not like it is now. Back then, if I was working as a therapist in a hospital, if you even mentioned yoga, you were suddenly considered a complete nut and not to be listened to anymore. You're completely gone off the deep end. It's not, people really can't imagine how it was even such a short time ago. So of course it wasn't safe to mention Osho, yoga, even personal growth, these kinds of things. And gradually over the years, I think we've all moved to areas of the world. Timothy Leary used to say people will go to little oases around the planet where we're free to be ourselves. And so the west side of LA here is one area where there's a lot of alternative people, spiritual people. But even in my career, I had to be undercover, an undercover spiritual person for so many years. I really was a split personality. I would have my personality at home with my friends or with other sannyasins, and then there would be this person I was at work. And this for many years, it was a bit crazy making and always having to be careful not to say the wrong things. And then gradually over the years, as society changed and as I grew stronger in myself, I just decided, and I had a major birthday. I'm like, I'm coming out of the closet. I don't care anymore. I'm successful enough. And if people start taking away from my credibility, I've established enough credibility. I've written books. I've been a speaker. I've been manager in hospital programs. I served on the state board of the therapist association. So I've established enough credibility. If people want to take it away, I don't care. And I've been financially successful enough. I'm coming out. So I launched my Transpersonal Counseling Center, which we've now renamed the Transpersonal Center, because transpersonal is really about going beyond the person. It's a form of psychology, unlike any other Western psychology, that says there's something beyond the person that is beyond your ego, beyond you. This is a way to talk about a lot of what Osho taught us. And I started openly talking about Osho in my sessions, if and when that seemed appropriate, not trying to turn anyone into a sannyasin, but to say, just as people might quote Buddha, or they might quote Einstein, or they might quote anybody, I'm quoting Osho when that's appropriate. And I will say Osho, my master, my spiritual master, or if it seems like a less open audience, my spiritual teacher, which seems kind of small compared to his impact on my life, but that's what I'll say. And it's gradually become this thing where I, in my profession, I'm openly open about this. There have been, there haven't really been, as I'm aware of, that many therapists in the United States that have been really open. Of course, there's therapists in Europe, but I know there was a sannyasin in Pune One named Bernard Gunther, who wrote some books, who was an open advocate of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Of course, Margot Anand, who's one of my tantra teachers, speaks openly about Osho. But other than that, I'm not aware of that many therapists who have come out of the closet. I think more will happen.
You think more will happen? Yeah, I love this. I really love your story. And I feel this is happening. And part of what we're doing with Love Osho podcast is exactly this. And it's kind of, even despite of us, is this energy that is taking us in this direction. And more and more is becoming clear that what we want to do is not just record the story of the sannyasins who have been with Osho, which they have value in itself, is historical value, it's beautiful to connect for us with the sannyasins, to learn from you. But it's also a way to say, Osho is a genius. His contribution is not acknowledged. Let's talk about Osho. Let's be open. Enough of this kind of, as you said, be undercover and have these split personalities. Even though I wasn't there, but even in my life, in the early, my early days of my career, I couldn't be open about Osho, right, about my interests. And that's already much later compared to the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So, but things are changing. You know, I can feel that it's in the air. Something is in the air. How do you perceive this? And what's the response when you talk to people about Osho? What has been the feedback?
Actually, in the United States right now, I thought we were having an opening, but with the recent developments in the last 4 years, we have to really wonder if any kind of evolution is happening, because it's been so shocking at the low level of consciousness in this country that was hiding under the surface. So I live in this little bubble here in west part of Los Angeles, where there's people who are evolving and becoming more open to Osho and so on. So it's a little, little disconcerting to talk about it. But I do notice that when I'm open about Osho, there's an interest. When I say how many people in the room have heard of Osho, there will always be a few hands. There isn't, I think I steel myself a little bit that people are going to go, Osho. Now I even offer, I'll say, that's the guy from the Wild Wild Country show, just so they can hear that we're talking openly about it. You know, that thing in advertising that even bad, Osho knew this better than any of us, bad publicity is better than no publicity. So it's like even that show, when I, at the tantra classes that I teach, if I have a stack of Osho tantra books, the Tantra Vision, I'll put them out. People always buy them. So I think it's just as we start to not be afraid, not be in the closet anymore, just say, here is this. I've heard that the books are selling better than ever, that the interest is all time high. I don't know that. That's secondary information. But I think there is, especially in this pandemic, there's a question of, what's going on? I have a lot of time to find out, to be on a quest, and Osho makes sense. Osho just makes sense.
Absolutely. It's, I mean, wonderful. No. When you say, like, people refer to Buddha, refer to, you know, Dalai Lama, refer to, you know, Yogananda, Krishnamurti, Osho is never there, but Osho is the foundation of so many ideas that are circulating now in the world of personal development. You know, so many therapies have learned from Osho, right, from sannyasins, but no one is then referring to the source of Osho. So we need to change that. And that's
we do need. Yeah, we do need to change that.
So you mentioned Tantra. So I want to come to that in a second, because I understand it's your passion, is what you're teaching at the moment. But just before that, I'm curious to know if you have ever had the chance to use dynamic meditation in a therapeutic context?
I have not. Dynamic is not my favorite. We are not particular allies, but I am in love with Kundalini meditation. So I often will recommend to patients to do Kundalini meditation, and they will go home and download it off Spotify or stream it off Spotify and come back and report. Maybe they didn't take it up as a practice, but they did it and it helped enliven them. In my workshops, we always do Kundalini. This is my favorite. When I was in Pune for a year, I lived in Pune for a year. I did every afternoon, maybe I missed now and then, but pretty much every afternoon for a year, I did Kundalini meditation and this aliveness that comes from it and the sexiness of being in this big room with all these people shaking. And it was just a fantastic experience. And so this meditation, I openly advocate. I send people home to do it. I participate in it with my people in the workshops. And this meditation, I can openly just say to everyone, dynamic to me, this is too intense. I like to have a nice quiet coffee meditation in the morning, not start being aerobic. So we all gravitate to what's our thing.
Absolutely. And the beauty of Osho is that he gave us so many different techniques and we all different. So we tune into different things. And Kundalini, to be honest, is one of the most popular and most loved meditations. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful. So Tantra, let's come to Tantra. Tantra used to be an esoteric discipline. And again, this is something that no one really is acknowledging that, but Osho is the one that brought Tantra back to life. He spoke, he commented on so many ancient Tantra teachers, and then so many sannyasins took over this passion for Tantra and went off to become thought leaders and therapists who influenced and trained and taught to many other Tantra teachers that we have around today. So how did your passion personally for you for Tantra started? And what do you see happening in the world of Tantra today compared to when you started?
Great question. I actually had started back there in 78, which, as you said, back then people weren't, Tantra wasn't even a commonly known word. And I had just encountered this idea that sex was spiritual. And I was like, wow, that is the truth for me. There's something else going on sexually than nobody's talking about. So that's why I had been looking and attracted to Osho's book, The Book of Secrets. Oh, this is all about Tantra. I started finding, back then you could buy all the books on a subject. Obviously you can't now, but I just devoured any books. I started going on. I studied with some of the Western Tantra teachers who were influenced by Osho, like Charles Muir, some of these people. Then when I went to Pune for a year, I studied with Margo Anand. Radha Luglio was my main teacher there, and Gitama from Greece were co-leaders of, I did, oh, I don't know, 5-6 groups with them while I was there. And I had already been initiated into Tantra by Bodhi Avinasho, who's a sannyasin, who was working with Saraswati, and they had initiated me in the 80s sometime. And all this time I was quite passionate, and there wasn't a lot to learn or to find out about back then. So I just kept going where I could go. There was a tantric community here, but the tantric community here was pretty much an excuse for people to sleep around a lot, which that's fine. I'm not against that, but it wasn't really what I was looking for. So in California, a lot of it gets blended in with a polyamory community and all these things that are not my resonance. I don't care. I have no judgment on it. It's just not what I resonate with. But to me, it's not the same thing. Because Tantra, to me, you said it used to be esoteric discipline. To me, it still is. So even though it's gone a little bit more mainstream, like this much, and it's more open, and you can find Tantra classes everywhere, I think the difference between sannyasins that are carrying the transmission from Osho and other people who are doing it is that we still hold that it comes from an enlightened consciousness. It comes from this higher frequency. It's not just about being very sexually active and having a lot of partners. Nothing wrong with this. Just like Osho would say, go sleep with everyone until you're done sleeping with everyone. I mean, you know, you're uptight about sex, just go have a lot of sex. But the point there wasn't that having a lot of sex or taking it to the end point. Well, he did say, you know, don't repress yourselves, finish, because I see a lot of older people, for example, who didn't have enough sex. So they're still trying to finish that, like, finish, have enough. But then after you have enough, what's next? Where is this esoteric wisdom coming from that is imparted through sexuality? So we see a lot of people here teaching who, it's great. I think everything they're doing is great, but I think that some of us are still carrying that transmission of this is a it's from sex to super consciousness. It's not just sex. So we start off our teachings by saying this, which is, out of all of the sutras, the tantras, sex is 5% of this worldview. And this has helped me move more into the role of leading tantra seminars, is that being with Osho, my entire approach to life is tantric. Osho said that tantra means there's basically two life paths. There's the one where you have to do something, which is Judeo-Christian. You have to not have fun and eat a certain way and, you know, not enjoy sex and not enjoy your body and all these things that are requirements to higher consciousness. And the tantric worldview, which is, you're already there. Just relax into it. Everything's already perfect. And I realized that by being with Osho for 30 years, it's like this consciousness, I'm living a tantric life, and the sexuality has come out of this tantric worldview rather than taking a bunch of classes on how to be better in bed, which I've done also, and I'm happy I did, but that's not the essence of Osho Tantra, which is we come from this essence of, if I'm not feeling that my life is perfect in this moment, I have some kind of glasses over my eyes that would be better to be removed. And as I bring this approach in my life and to my lover, then tantric lovemaking happens, which is we are perfect together in this perfect moment. We're not trying to get anywhere else. We're not trying to just have an orgasm and get off and think how great we are that we had such a super duper orgasm. We're riding the energy waves, and we've all of a sudden we find ourselves surfing on an orgasmic wave of the universe rather than trying to make an orgasm happen. This is what we're teaching, is this Osho, of what I have come from Osho, which is that life is bliss already. We just tap into that. We don't do stuff to try to get there. We meditate. We try to relax. We do try to do stuff, because it's not black and white that we do stuff or we don't. But it is this gift from Osho of a tantric vision of, you're already there. Try to remove, the work really is to remove what is in the way of realizing you're already there. I remember a really important moment in my life was, you know, a tantra class with Radha. And I often quote this to patients. Radha, someone asked Radha, how do I get more pleasure in my life? And Radha said so simply and beautifully, I don't ever try to get more pleasure. I just find the places where I'm blocking the pleasure. So, wow, this is such the tantra worldview. It's like the Western worldview is to strive and try to get more pleasure and try to achieve more and try to do more. And in sex, try to have bigger and bigger orgasms and try to do this and that. There's nothing inherently wrong with this, but we can contrast it to, pleasure is already here. How am I blocking that? How am I not putting my attention on that? How am I not breathing that? How could I let the breath relax a little more? How could I notice a little bit more the beauty of this touch of the air on my skin, rather than having to try to get more intense motion with my partner? I'll just lay here, and instead of noticing what's wrong with my partner's touch, which is what Western sexuality teaches, voice what you don't like, it's, how do I enjoy this simple touch on my hand of my partner even more? How can I let that in and relax into that? So this to me is Osho's tantra vision versus a lot of how the West, which Western tantra has all come from Osho, but without that direct relationship with Osho, it turns into something which is sort of sex glorified, which is okay. I love sex and it's very important to me as well, but it doesn't come from this vision of, we're using sex to get to this place where everything is an orgasmic wave. When I was living in the Osho ashram, I started having spontaneous orgasms, which I had never heard of and never expected to experience. I would just be sitting, listening to the discourse in the morning, and an orgasm would start shooting up my spine, and I would start shaking, and my vagina would be pulsing. I'd be like, whoa, I didn't even know this was a thing. And that's when I started realizing that it's, you know, we can make ourselves have orgasms, or we can relax to the, or that's when I realized that orgasm is always happening. It's whether or not we're tuning into it. So we study Tantra, we meditate, read things, we open to Osho's energy, which to me is an energy beyond the man Osho. It's some sort of cosmic frequency that I certainly don't have words for. But as we open more to this energy, there's a cosmic orgasm that's always going on all the time. And people call that sex, but that's only because we don't have words for it. So we ride this frequency, and this frequency raises our frequency, and then we can share Osho and this higher state of consciousness. And hopefully I think it's a worldwide movement. Osho said Tantra would come back as the world was in its last days. And I know Buckminster Fuller, who I'm somewhat of a student of, said that life only gets saved always at the very last minute. So we're getting up to the last minute here, and Tantra's here. And I think this vision is hopefully going to ripple out as it's doing, getting bigger and bigger, and more and more people will start riding the wave.
This is so beautifully articulated. I really love, and it's so Osho. So many things, so many ideas are coming to my mind, and it's hard to, you know, there is so much that you said. But I think something that I'd love to develop or acknowledge is that Tantra, as you say, is now mainstream. Meditation is definitely mainstream. And unfortunately, Osho's way of teaching Tantra and meditation is kind of lost a little bit. And
yeah,
when you were talking about that experience of having that spontaneous orgasm in just sitting, and I think so many sannyasins can say the same, and it's something so powerful, but the way meditation and Tantra is presented today is just something about, you know, relaxing a little bit more, improving to distress, even for high performance, for, you know, coping with the overwhelming stress of life, which is good and is beautiful. But there is so much more that is there and is not even addressed and acknowledged. And as a sannyasins that we have been lucky to have this access with this higher consciousness and have these very deep, powerful experiences. And we don't even talk much about that, because how do you explain it really? How do you present it? How do you communicate it in a way that is a little bit more science-based, a little bit more in tune with where the world is going? That's where I find myself. I want to find the language and the way that people can listen to something that is an experience that is like very deep, very powerful, but it's so far away from the normal experience of people, even those who started meditating. You know, all they're aiming for is a little bit of a better sleep, and that's already good for them. But what you are teaching in your Tantra training, for example, is so much deeper, it's so much wider, you know, if you really want to get the essence of what you're teaching there.
Yeah. I think that we have to realize, on the one hand, we're teaching, we're trying to speak to beginners who are trying to at least get to a level where they can, as you said, manage their lives a little better, and this is good. Then we also have the people who are trying to collect, thrill seekers who are trying to collect, and I was like this too probably, but they're trying to collect these traumatic experiences. And for example, we had a Tantra seminar last week on the foundations of conscious touch. So it's the foundations. What is the mindful touch that's underneath any sort of sexual practices you want to do in the future? So it's a little 2-hour online workshop, and helping people get very quiet and feel like this, put your attention on this touch. And have you ever put your attention on the receiving of this touch? People's minds were being blown. And so we were saying how this is, going to be a prerequisite for any future classes on any sort of sexual touch, is just being able to turn into this simple mindfulness. And then in the Q&A at the end, this man goes, "Well, that's fine, but where do I get the advanced techniques?" And I said, "Well, you're here in a beginning class. Maybe you want to, you know, get the basics first." He's like, "Well, who's teaching? How do I get those advanced techniques?" I said, "Well, there's plenty of people teaching them. You can find somebody next weekend to give them to you." And he's like, "Okay, I'm off to get those advanced techniques." So there's this sense, I think, of, since everything's available on the internet, everything, people don't want to you know, it's taken me 30 years to develop a true tantric consciousness, just being in it for 30 years. And so people just want to become experts in things. I was another man saying he started teaching tantra because he'd been sitting for a year and a half. I'm like, okay, you're an expert now, I guess. I guess that passes for an expert in today's world. So I think there's also this sense of it's not really understanding that a lot of these things marinate for a long time. And that it's, even though it's good that everything's available now, people are still beginners. To start at the beginning with beginner's minds, allow yourself to learn and become, have a tantric frequency. It's not just another thing to collect. You know, it's like, I think there's something in the modern world of it's another sexual thing to collect, you know. I'm this now, I've read Osho, I've read this, I've read that, you know, kind of like this. I don't think it's leading necessarily to a bad place, but I think that interrupts somehow.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a challenge nowadays to transmit something authentic and real that comes with a little bit of practice and humility in a world where people want everything in, you know, 12-week course.
Yes, even everyone wants to be and everyone wants a certificate of excellence after that 12 weeks that they're finished. Now they can go out and teach. It's like, okay, well, you know, I had a man yesterday that I'm seeing individually, and he wants to now start being a coach. I said, but your life's not together. It's like, oh, well, so I want to help people that are less together than me. It's like, So there is that very much hurrying to be an expert, which we have going on in the world today.
Absolutely. Totally. Happening. Everyone is a life coach. Everyone wants to share, want to set up their own business and do it. And it's good in a way, but on the other hand, I think that we need a little bit more work on ourselves before going and help others, right?
It's beautiful that desire to help, though. I do feel that.
Okay. Unless you have something more to add to Tantra, I just want to touch briefly upon something else I've noticed in your bio that you studied with Ken Wilber. And yes. I have read something about Ken Wilber initially, you know, because I was so much into Osho, I was a little bit like, okay, you know, this guy is, after reading Osho, it's hard to really take someone else seriously in a way. But then I wanted to learn more and I see that there is a lot of value. So I wanted to know from you, what did you take away? What's your biggest takeaway from the work of the ideas or the vision and philosophy of Ken Wilber?
Ken Wilber is, similarly to Osho, he read everything. He just was a dishwasher and he set out to read everything and he read everything. And he synthesized all the psychologies and spiritualities of the world and came up with something a little different than Osho because it's very intellectual and learned and scholarly, but of great value to me when I was studying. He was at the time the biggest voice in transpersonal psychology, probably still is. And he came up with this idea that all of the traditions and spiritual paths of the world could be put into a hierarchy. And he talked about, and he put all the different types of psychologies also and therapies into a hierarchy. So he said the most important thing for me was that he took different therapies and put them into if a person is radiating at this frequency, this kind of therapy will be most helpful for them. And people who are still trying to get their lives together in the mainstream world, it's helpful for them to have therapies that help them get their life together in the mainstream world rather than do what we call spiritual bypass and start becoming spiritual people when they don't have a job. So you see this a lot actually among sannyasins in any spiritual community. There's a lot of people who are, we would say their upper chakras are activated, but their lower aren't. So they're like spouting beautiful spiritual wisdom, but they can't pay their rent. So a lot of this work of Ken Wilber made me realize if this person shows up for therapy, we need to work on getting a job, paying your rent, and having a very solid foundation under yourself rather than continuing to talk about higher frequencies and higher consciousness and you continuing to go to groups, group therapies and so on. You need to learn this basic level of understanding. And then, for example, certain people whose lives are together already and they're starting a spiritual search, here's a good place to start. So it was different therapies are for different people. That was very helpful for me. that certain types of spiritual paths, such as certain Tibetan Buddhism, was addressing certain types of spiritual development, while indigenous traditions with drumming and psychotropic drugs and soul travel, for example, are addressing other types of a personality. So there was room for everything. I think where a lot of us moved away from Ken Wilber is that he's very hierarchical and saying these are better than these. Because later on, a man named Jose Ferrer came along and said, it's not linear like that. It's more, everything has its place. We can't say this is better than that. But it was very helpful because certain things are linear. We do have a chakra system, if we see it that way. We do have different levels of development that all need to be addressed to be a fully functioning person. We need a power center. We need a sexuality. We need a foundation to our life that is rooted. We need our hearts to be open. We need to be able to speak truth, you know, and not hide in the closet, although there are certain times we do in our careers need to hide in the closet, but we want to be able to become people whose throat centers are open, active, higher consciousness, of course. So there is this development that is addressed this way, and certain therapies will address different openings in different ways. Tantra, to go back to our previous discussion, a lot of Tantra today is just addressing the second chakra awakening, which is great because most people need that center opened. It's become very, this boring sex, that conventional sex is like, here, just do it the same way every time, you know, do some foreplay. She comes, he comes, and it's over. It's like, so boring to do that over and over and over. I mean, sex is always good, but we're told that that's what sex is. It's like everyone is bored. So, but to say that that's all it is, it's like Tantra is sex with the heart open, sex with the speaking the truth to each other, higher consciousness sex. And so it's all of these levels of a person activated. So Ken Wilber really helped a lot of us back in the 70s and 80s open our mind to how all of these therapies and so on are connected and how they're all can be useful and why a certain therapy would work with someone and another type of therapy wouldn't. And to be able to diverse ourselves, therefore, in different types of therapies instead of I'm a therapist with one hammer and I just hit every client with it. It's like, oh, how can I make this therapy for this person at the particular state of consciousness that they're at? So I might be able to speak to them in a language that they will understand. And back to your point earlier, I think we often have to introduce Osho's concepts and reality and frequency in a language that people understand. And that's not always quoting him exactly, but offering a hey, maybe your life's okay in this moment. You know, maybe you don't have to, a lot of how I might do therapy that's Osho inspired is rather than hating your anxiety, well, let's just be in the anxiety. Let's sit with our anxiety. What is it like if we're not against it? This is radical to many people, but this is an Osho way of therapy or personal and spiritual development of we don't have to be at war. Let's just be with the truth of this moment, which is I'm anxious. Actually, to be anxious in the modern world makes sense because the world is a little crazy. So it's not necessarily a negative to feel anxious with this current situation. It's not bad functioning to be anxious when the world is in a pandemic. That's not wrong. Now, if we're overcome with it and become crazy about it, then maybe we want to learn to tune that down a little. But it's not a bad sign that you find yourself anxious today.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And I think because what I've also benefited from in terms of Ken Wilber is this idea that there are different states of consciousness and he uses different colors to find people at different states of consciousness. And this applied to therapy makes absolute sense, but it also for me is applied to the way how I can communicate Osho's vision. And it's also clear that only a certain type of people in a certain color would be open to receive certain things said in a certain way, whereas with other people, maybe it's useful to use a different type of language. So I think that's absolutely spot on. And I'm wondering if you know, because Ken Wilber has read everyone, as you said, and I'm sure he must have read Osho as well. Do you know any reference of Ken Wilber to Osho? What's his view of Osho?
Well, I think it's quite telling that he never mentions Osho, never mentions him. So I think he has some sort of bee up his bonnet and about it. He also is a man who renounced his own guru. So this, I unfortunately have a judgment against because he was a disciple of Adida Samraj, who I think is another enlightened master. And so he turned on this. And I feel personally that Ken Wilber got very into an ego sort of state of being a superstar and so on. That's my personal opinion. And he never mentions any more these great teachers who were enlightened. So I don't know. He just never mentions him. And I think this is a lot of the attitude of the intelligentsia, is that they just don't consider and don't mention. Because in my personal estimation, the frequency is too high. Osho cannot be considered just on an intellectual level. I mean, it's astounding if you consider him intellectually, but the true radiance and the true frequency that he was communicating to us can't be received from someone who's merely an intellect. So these people who make their careers as intellects are not going to understand Osho. Osho is very much from the heart, and that's not going to be received from someone who wants to perceive only intellectually.
I love it. That makes sense, and it helps me to kind of understand a little bit more why I was wondering, you know, Ken Wilber, you know, such a great mind and who read everyone, never mentioned Osho. Clearly, he must have read, he knows Osho. I mean, it's impossible if not. So yeah, that might be that. It's a beautiful way to explain it. And it's true, even though I still think that even on the intellectual level, and this is one of the things, because that's the easier way to enter a conversation with people in the kind of normal world, if you like, is just discussing some of Osho's ideas, some of the things he said, even just for guiding us on a practical level, can be discussed, can be acknowledged. And I don't see this happening, you know, for some reason. And maybe because Osho is so clever, so intelligent, that once you enter in a conversation with him, either then you embrace him or you embrace him. There is no escape from Osho. That's for me.
Well, then you have like the Dalai Lama coming out and saying, you know, he's obviously an enlightened master. So people who don't have this skin in the intellectual game are free to say the truth, which is, you know, he's resonating at this high frequency. And a lot of people don't want to, they have never experienced, and they don't want to acknowledge that a higher frequency exists. And I know when I was in India, I met other people radiating, not maybe at Osho's frequency, but at a frequency that you walk into the room with them and you are suddenly, everything looks psychedelic because something that's happening to the light and the room and the frequency, all your molecules start going crazy. And if people haven't had that experience, they don't necessarily believe in it. What was that famous thing from the Bible, or that guy, Timothy, or whoever he was, Doubting Thomas? He says, I don't believe unless I experience it myself. And so then he had the experience of experiencing Christ in the flesh, and I'm sorry, I'm not a Christian, I'm doing my best here, and he experienced God in the flesh, Jesus in the flesh, and then he was a believer. So I think there's a lot of this level of frequency that Osho radiated, that certain spiritual experiences, people of a certain sort of consciousness have not had and are not able to have because of what they're learning in life, and so they just deny it and don't believe it. And there's not a lot we can do about that except say, hey, you don't have to be anxious. You know?
Wonderful, wonderful. And I really like this reminder of Dalai Lama acknowledging Osho. It's probably the only one that at that level who openly acknowledged Osho as an enlightened master. So that's beautiful. So we are heading towards the end. We need to wrap up. I have three final questions. But before that, is there anything else that I didn't ask, or anything else you want to add?
I feel really good about this conversation. I'm a little nervous about your three questions here. Let's go.
Okay. It's okay to be anxious.
Thank you. You have to remind me that.
Okay, so the first one is, what is Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Oh my God. I think he brought a frequency of being that has not existed on the planet before. So I think the whole frequency of the world was lifted. People don't know this yet. People will know this in 1,000 years. But I believe that all the enlightened masters that came before Osho was actually a higher frequency. And a lot of us are carrying that in us, still in shock, still in awe of this level of enlightenment. And I think it's a great blessing to have been able to be anywhere near that.
Beautiful. So the second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received personally from Osho?
I believe that everything important that I am or anything that I have to contribute came from Osho. I was very lost before. And as I've continued to mature, heal myself, become more and more a person who wants to be of service, I feel that everything that I share that is of value came from Osho. People don't know that or hear that. They think that sometimes people go, wow, you see things differently than everyone else. And I'm like, well, not different than other sannyasins. You know, very different than the mainstream, but that all came from Osho. I've written 4 books, and each one of them is really not consciously, but it's teaching Osho's message. It comes from me, but it's actually Osho's message. I think all sannyasins, it's coming through us, sharing Osho's wisdom.
Amazing. The last question is, what does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
I don't know if I'm with Osho, as Osho is in me and is me. And it's probably the most important thing in my life. And I'm always very grateful. And it feels like I have a special thing to have been chosen to receive Osho and to know about him and to be part of this awakening, to be able to be a part of this awakening that all sannyasins are. You know, it's funny because so many groups you belong to, you feel kind of jealous of the other people or competitive with them. But, you know, amongst sannyasins, there's just this thing like, oh my God, you're in love with Osho also. Oh my God, how wonderful. And when you hear someone new taking sannyas, you're like, oh yes, yes. And you know, I don't have that experience in any other groups. Like, who is this person entering? And it's just this beautiful, oh, we're part of this movement. We're part of this awakening. And that is such a joy to be part of all of us.
Well, I thank you so much for beautiful, 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 positive light, energy, and love for Osho, for life. It's really, you know, heartwarming for me personally. It's so in line with what we are doing here at Love Osho Podcast. And I'm so pleased that people who, like yourself, you are a professional, you are in the world, you wrote 4 books, you are established, successful in your career, and you're so open about Osho. And, you know, I want to commend you for that. And I wish that many, many, many more people moving forward, we get into this wave of a reawakening about being open about the love, light, beauty, genius of Osho.
Amen. I love it. Thank you for your work and helping to get the word out.
Absolutely. And I'll link your website and your books in the show notes. So anyone interested to hear more about the work you do, your Tantra seminars, and read your books, they can find you there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lots of love.
Lots of love.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.